From Entrepreneur Media, this is Problem Solvers, a show in which entrepreneurs do what entrepreneurs do best, solve unexpected problems in their business.
We were completely wrong.
And I'm just like, it's not selling.
It was like, we have to start from scratch.
I'm Jason Pfeiffer, the editor-in-chief of Entrepreneur Magazine. It's 1986, and this brand new wine brand called Barefoot Wine had just won the gold medal at the Sonoma County Wine Competition. It was a great accomplishment for such a young brand, though it did come with a little catch.
We were told by the fair that we had to pour for the public the next weekend, anybody that took a gold medal.
This is Bonnie, one of the co-founders.
Yes, I'm Bonnie Harvey, co-founder of Barefoot Wines.
And I'm the other co-founder, Michael Houlihan.
And we'll be hearing from both of them in this episode. So, okay, Bonnie and Michael win this competition, and they're told that they have to pour for the public, which they're very happy to do. They're a new wine brand and are all about increasing their visibility. So going out there and touting their medal is perfect. That's what they're going to do. They set up a stand and start pouring.
And this very serious-looking man in a gray suit came up, and he said, do you have a license for that? I says, well, yeah. I said, I guess so. I've got a gold medal. Look, would you like a taste? He says, no. He says, you don't have a license for that, and that means that you either pay a $10,000 fine or you stop selling. You are not going to be conducting any business for a month.
This, it would turn out, would be the first of many, many problems that Bonnie and Michael encountered because they were not wine people. They had no idea how to run a wine business. They'd basically stumbled into it, as I'll explain in a minute, and they were just trying to learn as they went. But now, here they'd had their first big success as a brand, and they were already facing the kind of event that could kill a young business. Because, you know, they didn't have $10,000 to pay a fine, which meant that they'd have to take option B.
All we could do was close our business for a month, which totally devastated us when we heard that's what we had to do.
But did it devastate Barefoot Wine? If you've ever walked into a wine store, like ever, you know the answer to that is no. Barefoot Wine is one of the most well-known wine brands. It is literally everywhere. And in 2005, Bonnie and Michael sold the company to Gallo, the largest family-owned winery in the world. But along the way, they made many, many stumbles as they learned the industry. And the thing that's so impressive about them is that they always seem to turn the stumble to their advantage. Rather than throw their hands into the air with every setback, they stopped and thought, okay, how do we make use of this? How is this beneficial to us? And so that's the story I want to tell here. Barefoot Wine has a long history, and I can't tell it all, but I want to tell you about how they recovered in spectacular fashion from this one-month suspension, and then how it played into a larger strategy that they totally miscalculated and then ultimately thrived from. It's all about turning mistakes into successes here on Problem Solvers, so grab your wine glass and kick back. We'll get into it all right after the break. Here's a funny thing about problems. Sometimes, if you wait long enough, a solution just appears. Like, for example, if you need life insurance, but you've been putting it off because it's too complicated to research or whatever, and then, hooray, technology is developed that makes it easy. You have Policy Genius to thank for that. Policy Genius is the easy way to shop for insurance online. In just 2 minutes, you can compare quotes from top insurers to find your best price. And they'll also do the same for home, auto, and disability insurance. And if you're thinking, wait a second, Policy Genius sure sounds familiar, that's because you're a longtime listener of this show and remember our episode from a while back where the company's founder talked about how she launched it originally as Know It Owl, and then she very smartly changed the name to Policy Genius. I loved that episode. So listen, if you need life insurance, but you've clearly been too busy listening to every episode of this podcast on repeat, well, time to check out Policy Genius. It is the easy way to compare all the top insurers and find the best value for you. PolicyGenius.com. Nobody wants to shop for life insurance. That's why we made it easy. And now our second sponsor. The University of Utah David Eccles School of Business is the place for problem solvers. Earn your MBA from the university that educated the founders of JetBlue, Adobe, Marriott, Pixar, and more. The University of Utah's MBA is ranked number 2 in the U.S. for learning and entrepreneurship, and you can now earn it online in as little as 24 months. Gain business knowledge focused around innovation from their on-demand, mobile-optimized platform. To learn more and to receive an application fee waiver, visit utahmbaonline.com/problem solvers. Again, that is utahmbaonline.com/problem solvers. All right, we're back. So before we get into the growth of Barefoot Wine, let's explain how Bonnie and Michael got into this crazy business to begin with. Because they didn't come from wine. They were business consultants. But then a farmer they worked with got into trouble.
There was a farmer who hadn't been paid for his grapes for 3 years. And Bonnie sent me out. I just met Bonnie. And she said, you've had some business experience. Go negotiate this deal, see what we can get. So I went up there to talk to them. The day we got there, they had just declared bankruptcy. And so the only thing I was able to get out of them was wine and bottling services.
In other words, here's an opportunity. Help this guy out, take control of his wine, dip into the wine business for a little bit, and everyone's happy.
We said, hey, I guess we'll just bottle it all up, sell it at the chains, and pay the grower back that was owed for his grapes and put a couple bucks in our pocket. How hard could it be?
And how long could that take?
The first thing they do is try to understand where the white space in the wine industry is. They've got wine, but, you know, who wants this wine? What can they do with it? So they start surveying retailers and others in the industry and discover the white space. It's on the very low end. People are looking for a good bottle of wine that retails $5.99. And so Bonnie and Michael think, okay, let's figure out how to make it.
Yeah, it's $5.99 on the shelf, say $6. Okay. So now the store wants to sell it and they want to see a percentage of that as profit. So in order to see that profit, they have to mark it up. So typically they will mark it up 33 1/3% to see 25% on profit.
Right. And then you've got to deal with the distributors who also want to cut. And in the end, the couple realizes that they've got to produce a bottle of wine for basically $3. If they sell it for $3 a bottle, they break even. If they can sell it for $4 a bottle, then they make a tiny profit. So they figure, okay, this is a volume game. We'll have to scale this thing up like crazy, make a tiny profit off of each bottle, develop a brand that people love, and then the real money will come when we sell the whole thing off to some big wine company. That's the play all along. Build a brand, sell it. And it sounds like a good plan, but well, let me let that hang in suspense for a moment, because they won't discover the flaw in their plan for a little bit. Instead, Bonnie and Michael get to work executing this plan. They know their price point, and because of that, they also know their customer.
Well, for us, the customer was a 37-year-old mom with 2.5 kids pushing a cart through a grocery store that sold wine, looking for a Tuesday night, everyday staple bottle of wine, not a Saturday night bottle of wine. So this is a whole different mentality. Now, for her, she was more interested in spinach than vintage, and she wanted it to taste the same from year to year to year. Imagine that. So she's actually asking for a blend rather than a vintage wine.
So the goal now is to use that wine that they got from the bankrupt farmer and develop a blend that'll be the same every year. This isn't fancy stuff here. This is not a 1986 Cabernet from a specific region. This is a product that they can source and manufacture in bulk and can ensure that it tastes exactly the same every year. So they bring on some help to develop this, and then they release their first bottles and they win that award from the Sonoma County Wine Competition. And then you know what happens next. The government man shows up and says, you don't have a license and you need to pay a fine or be shut down for a month, which for a totally new brand trying to gain momentum is a real killer. But there's a small window of sunlight. One little thing that Bonnie and Michael see that could save their business so long as they play it right. And that one little thing was when the month-long suspension begins.
It didn't start that day. They set it as 10 days into the future. So we had 10 days to scramble and figure out what the heck we were going to do. I mean, you know, we thought this was the end of the business, and then we came up with this idea.
And the idea was this: fire sale, right now. Sell as absolutely much wine as they can.
So we said, okay, why don't we go to everybody who's been buying from us and offer them a deal? Say, you know, buy a month's worth of product from us right now, pay cash, and we'll give you a big discount. And so they did.
Because, you know, Barefoot Wine may not be able to sell wine during the suspension, but the retailers could still sell whatever Barefoot Wine stock they had. So although this discount would cut deeply into Barefoot Wine's already tiny margins, this would allow Bonnie and Michael to move more product and stay visible. And as it turns out, this would have some unexpected benefits.
And an interesting thing happened. Their warehouse guys started screaming at him and saying, hey, you bought all this Barefoot Wine. We don't have any room here in the warehouse. We're not used to handling this much product. You'd better sell it at the stores. You'd better put it on ad. You better put it on display. You better discount it and get rid of it. And so they were kind of forced to sell it like that. Well, we were new and nobody knew Barefoot. All of a sudden, Barefoot is on the floors of these supermarkets and people are tripping over it in their carts and they're seeing it and they're going, wow, look at this. You know, here's something new. You know, it has a foot on it. It's colorful. You know, we had Barefoot on the beach posters and all this. And so a month goes by and we paid our dues, right? We timed out the penalty of losing our license for a month. And so then at the end of the month, we get a big surprise. Several of these big companies called us and said, can you do that again?
Because these retailers loved having this huge stock of cheap wine. It sold well. They wanted more, which is good and bad, right? I mean, it's good because it's building the Barefoot Wine brand, but it's bad because now Barefoot Wine has trained people to expect a deep discount. So Bonnie and Michael think about this and say, yes, you can have the deal again, but it's going to be a little different this time.
We tightened up the deal. Here's what tightening up means. Yes, you can get it again this month, but this time you have to buy this much and not
this. 6 weeks worth of goods.
You got to buy 6 weeks worth.
Instead of four.
And you have to buy in full pallets. And you have to buy a container full. Or you have to buy one SKU in a full pallet.
One varietal.
So, and yes, we were still not even breaking even on this, but we realized that this was the best way to market our product because, you know, when you have a CPG and it's not being sold online, it's being sold in bricks and mortar retail, you're only as good as the retail stores you're in. And so the question is, how many retail stores are you in and are you visible?
So this is basically how Barefoot Wine solved its suspension problem. It used its suspension as a way to blast its brand out into the world at a discount and was sending away so much wine that it created a flood in the marketplace, leading to great visibility and ultimately moving the brand towards its goal of massive volume. But okay, remember how I said there was a problem with that volume plan? Now is the time to hear about it.
We weren't really very clever because we underestimated one big cost, and that is the cost of sales. Not the cost of goods, but the cost of sales. We didn't realize that we were going to be spending $5 to $10 a case on sales. And that's not just promotion and ads. That's everything that you can think of, including, you know, incentive programs, discount programs, taxes when you sell in another state, you know,
freight,
shipping, all that stuff.
Cost of sales. Bonnie and Michael had only thought about how to make a cheap bottle of wine, not how to sell a cheap bottle of wine. And they totally missed this point for, wait for it, 9 years. For 9 years, they were selling this wine, working with a super tight budget and often losing money, and they just could not figure out what was wrong. The answer had to be, well, we haven't hit our volume yet. That's what they kept thinking. We haven't gotten to the point where the volume makes this much sense. And this turned out to not actually be an entirely bad thing because it led Barefoot to think very creatively about cutting all of its costs. For example, marketing. It didn't have money for advertising, but it did have money to send a rep into the local communities where Barefoot Wine was being stocked.
We went into those communities and we found out what they were interested in besides a fine bottle of wine at a low price. And we found out they were interested in building an after-school park or cleaning up a local creek or building a library or something like this. So they'd have local fundraisers. And we would support their fundraisers, not only with our product, but also by going there and supporting the event with our labor by helping set up, helping break down, and also, most importantly, was getting their message of this fundraiser into the marketplace in the community where this fundraiser was taking place. They did not have access to the market, to the actual stores in their community, and we did. So we would put a sign on our bottle that said, please support the Boys and Girls Club of Santa Rosa. They're having a fundraiser next Saturday.
You want to impress that target buyer, the 37-year-old mom looking for a Tuesday bottle of wine? This is what does it. It does it better than an advertisement and for far cheaper. By trying to save money on marketing, Barefoot Wine actually developed better marketing. And here's another important thing. They hired a guy named Doug McCorkle, who they nicknamed the Cork, because he put a stop to bad spending.
Get a cost accountant. Okay, not a full books accountant. You can have one of those. And not a CPA. You can have one of those. But an accountant that is a cost accountant. So we wound up hiring one by accident. We didn't know he was a cost accountant until he was on board. And he started saying, you know, I took a look at the costs. And you guys are trying to sell wine in New York, and the cost of sales in New York is 5 times higher than it is the cost of sales in North Carolina. You guys should forget New York for a couple of years and focus on North Carolina until you can build up a war chest to go into New York.
And over the years, they slightly raised their prices. Not much. And Barefoot Wine would never take the lead on price hikes. They'd wait until the industry as a whole shifted and many of their competitors had moved upwards. And it was small and subtle. For example, in 1995, 9 years after they launched, they raised the price from $5.99 at retail to $6.49. But then they would discount it back to $5.99 and then go back and forth with the prices for a while before landing it solidly at $6.49. And they kept refining their relationships with their suppliers as well. For example, their glass manufacturer. Because yeah, they needed glass on the cheap. But they could make the argument that, listen, you'll sell a lot more glass to us than to a wine brand that sells at $50 a bottle. So let's make a deal and sell some glass. And as they grew, they would finally see some profit out of this business. But it was a small amount and they'd always end up pouring it back into the business. Because, hey, if they're expanding, that means new markets, which means new people to impress and local clubs to get involved in and retailers to check in on. And if, you know, Barefoot Wine doesn't do it, then someone else will.
Are we going to buy a new house, a new car? No, we're going to buy a new representative. See? And so the idea is that stream you're swimming in there is pretty stiff current. And if you're not going upstream, you're going downstream. There's no treading water. So you either have to invest every dime you're making, and that includes, quote, profits, unquote, into growth, or you get washed away by somebody else who's better capitalized and sees the market you've identified.
And here's what ultimately happened. Bonnie and Michael thought this whole thing would take 5 years. Remember, they started in 1986. They figured that in 5 years, by 1991, they'd have built a wine brand and sold it off and moved on to something else. And that is not what happened. It was slow going. They questioned many times whether this made any financial sense, but they kept refining, kept squeezing their budget, kept looking for creative solutions to unexpected problems. And in 2005, which is to say, 14 years after they thought they'd be done with this business, they finally sold Barefoot Wine to Gallo. And everyone wins after that. Bonnie and Michael get a huge payout, and Gallo grows Barefoot Wine into the best-selling wine brand in the U.S., which made me wonder something.
When you sold, did you feel like, phew, we pulled off this crazy thing that didn't really make sense, right? Like, you had built this thing that really only made sense if you sold it like this. Did you?
Yes.
That's exactly how we felt. Yeah.
You nailed it, Jason.
Yeah. It was like, phew.
Yeah.
Finally. It worked.
Did you?
It was a get rich slow scheme, Jason.
A get rich slow scheme. I have to say, this is a pretty great synonym for entrepreneurship. Yeah, you can build a company and make a lot of money. It's possible. Hopefully it happens, but it never quite works out as planned and probably doesn't happen nearly as fast as you'd like it to. And you'll only get to the finish line if you're willing to change your plan a million times along the way and be as nimble as Bonnie and Michael were throughout it all. So here we are. Let's raise a glass and toast to get rich slow schemes. And that's our episode. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to Problem Solvers wherever you get your podcasts. We come out with a new episode every Monday morning and you don't want to miss it. And hey, be kind. Pass the show along to an entrepreneur friend who could use a boost. And did you solve a problem that would be good for this show? Let me know about it. Visit my website, jasonfeifer.com, JasonFeifer.com, where you can find my contact information and all sorts of other valuable info. Problem Solvers is a production of Entrepreneur Media. Be sure to visit entrepreneur.com for all your entrepreneurship needs. And even better, subscribe to our magazine, which is just full of the smartest entrepreneurs solving the toughest problems. My name is Jason Feifer, the editor-in-chief of Entrepreneur Magazine. Thanks for listening. And hey, let's go solve some problems.